make up white. But there are also eight colours of darkness for those that have the seeing of them, and the hives of death are among the black grass, in the black orchard, under the black-blossomed ancient boughs of trees that will eventually produce apples that, put it like this, probably won't be red. The grass was short now. The scythe that had done the work leaned against the gnarled bole of a pear tree. Now Death was inspecting his bees, gently lifting the combs in his skeletal fingers. A few bees buzzed around him. Like all beekeepers, Death wore a veil. It wasn't that he had anything to sting, but sometimes a bee would get inside his skull and buzz around and give him a headache. As he held a comb up to the grey light of his little world between the realities, there was the faintest of tremors. A hum went up from the hive, a leaf floated down. A wisp of wind blew for a moment through the orchard, and that was the most uncanny thing, because the air in the land of death is always warm and still. Death fancied that he heard, very briefly, the sound of running feet, and a voice saying, no, a voice thinking, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, I'm going to die. Death is almost the oldest creature in the universe, with habits and modes of thought that mortal man cannot begin to understand. But because he was also a good beekeeper, he carefully replaced the comb in its rack and put the lid on the hive before reacting. He strode back through the dark garden to his cottage, removed the veil, carefully dislodged a few bees who had got lost in the depths of his cranium, and retired to his study. As he sat down at his desk, there was another rush of wind, which rattled the hourglasses on the shelves and made the big pendulum clock in the hall pause ever so briefly in its interminable task of slicing time into manageable bits. Death sighed and focused his gaze. There is nowhere death will not go, no matter how distant and dangerous. In fact, the more dangerous it is, the more likely he is to be there already. Now he stared through the mists of time and space.
"Oh," he said, "it's him."
It was a hot afternoon in late summer in Ankh-Morpork, normally the most thriving, bustling, and above all the most crowded city on the disk. Now the spears of the sun had achieved what innumerable invaders, several civil wars, and the curfew law had never achieved. It had pacified the place. Dogs lay panting in the scalding shade. The river Ankh, which never what you might call sparkled, oozed between its banks as if the heat had sucked all the spirit out of it. The streets were empty, oven brick hot. No enemies had ever taken Ankh-Morpork. Well, technically they had quite often. The city welcomed free-spending barbarian invaders, but somehow the puzzled raiders always found, after a few days, that they didn't own their own horses anymore, and within a couple of months they were just another minority group with its own graffiti and food shops. But the heat had besieged the city and triumphed over the walls. It lay over the trembling streets like a shroud. Under the blow-lamp of the sun, assassins were too tired to kill. It turned thieves honest. In the ivy-covered fastness of Unseen University, Premier College of Wizardry, the inmates dozed with their pointy hats over their faces. Even bluebottles were too exhausted to bang against window panes. The city siestered, awaiting the sunset and the brief, hot, velvet surcease of the night. Only the librarian was cool. He was also swinging and hanging out. This was because he'd rigged up a few ropes and rings in one of the sub-basements of the Unseen University Library. The one where they kept the, erotic books. Just erotic, nothing kinky. It's the difference between using a feather and using a chicken. In vats of crushed ice, and he was dreamily dangling in the chilly vapour above them. All books of magic have a life of their own. Some of the really energetic ones can't simply be chained to the bookshelves. They have to be nailed shut or kept between steel plates. Or, in the case of the volumes on tantric sex magic for the serious connoisseur, kept under very cold water to stop them bursting into flames and scorching their severely plain covers. The librarian swung gently back and forth above the seething vats, dozing peacefully. Then the footsteps came out of nowhere, raced across the floor with a noise that scraped the raw surface of the soul, and disappeared through the wall. There was a faint, distant scream that sounded like, oh gods, oh gods, oh gods.